First of all, thank you to Deborah, David, and to everybody who works on Midrashat Yom Rishon. It's really an incredible program all the time, and especially the week before Pesach, and when Deborah asked me if I would speak at Midrashat Yom Rishon, am I going to be in the States at any time? And I said, well, I'm going to be here before Pesach, but I'm sure you're not running a shiur right before Pesach. She said, actually, we are running. And I said, okay, you know, so the five people who come, like, I'll be happy to give the shiur to, you know, that'll be great. You know, we all know that the Seder is about recreating Yetziat Mitzrayim. So, you know, the week before Pesach is, of course, the time of where we're really recreating the slavery, the bending over to clean the oven, the, you know, reaching around to get everything. And so it's really a big yesher koach to all of you for coming out to learn, even though there's lots and lots to do. So when I think about the Seder, I always think about this the story that happened to me when my oldest son was about 4 or 5 years old. He said one time we were up to Karpas, and we went to wash our hands, and it was just like in the book, you know, it was just like in the Gemara. We got up to wash our hands, and he says, "Ima, why are we washing our hands now? We're not about to have bread." And I was like, oh great, you know, this is the moment I've been waiting for. And I was about to answer, so that you'll ask the question, you know, and then I realized, that's a crazy answer. Like, he'll be like, that's why we're washing our hands, you know. And fortunately, before I opened my mouth to say that, you know, stellar answer, my husband jumped in and said, it's because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and started to tell him, you know, more about the story. And it was then that I realized that, you know, like, so the children will ask, right, is about just getting them, piquing their interest. You know, once you've gotten their interest, you don't need to answer about that specific thing, though it's nice if that specific thing has particular symbolism, but it's like you could do jumping jacks at the table also, you know what I mean? And then like they would say, why are you doing that? You'd be like, well, you know, once I've gotten your attention, here's what we're doing. So now, of course, it is particularly helpful, though, then when what you're doing is actually connected to the story in a sort of a more fundamental way. And so what I thought we would do today is take a fresh look at some of the symbols of the Seder, some of the mitzvot that we do at the Seder, so that we'll be able to better understand what we're doing, and also hopefully better transmit what we're doing to the younger people at the table. Let me just see if I can. Can people hear me? No. You have to hold it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why do we have to hold it? Okay. So if you look at source one on your sheets, you see the mitzvah of telling over the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of remembering the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. This is in Shmot Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Moshe El Ha'am. Remember this day that you left Mitzrayim from the house of slavery. Because Hashem took you out with a strong hand, and you shall not eat chametz. And the Rambam in source 2 says, Maimonides says, Mitzvah Esei Shel Torah, Lesaper Benisim V'Niflaot Shenasu La'Avotinu B'Mitzrayim B'Leil Chamisha Asar B'Nisan. We should, it's a mitzvah Esei, it's a positive commandment from the Torah to tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim on the night of the 15th. As it says, and he quotes our pasuk. And then he says, well, how do we know, Minayin Shel B'Leil Chamisha Asar, how do we know it's the 15th? It's supposed to be on the 15th. Zamud Lomar, V'Higadet El Abincha B'Yom Ahu Le'Mor Ba'Avur Zeh. Right? That it is because of this. And this refers to something that you can see, something you can point to. And the Gemara interprets and the Rambam codifies, at a time when matzah and marah are sitting in front of you. And even if you have no child, then even chachamim gdolim have to tell the story, and the more you talk about it, the better it is. So we see that it's the symbols, the actual, it's not a mitzvah just of Talmud Torah, of learning, where we can think about something. We have to actually see the matzah and the maror in front of us. So we see from this, right, and we have to actually taste them. We do a lot of active things at the Seder. It's a very active kind of mitzvah. It's a very active kind of remembering. It's not just remembering in our hearts and in our minds. It's something that we have to really see, feel, taste. We use all of our senses at the Seder. And so we see that the symbols are very, very critical to the retelling of the story. And we all know the idea that the Seder is supposed to be, why do we use all of our senses? Why do we need to really taste it, really feel it? Because we're trying to really experience the Seder, as it says in the Haggadah, in source 13 here, that you have to see yourself as though you left Mitzrayim, right? Behold, over dor chayav adam laharot et atzmo ki luhu yatza mimitzrayim. You have to see yourself or show yourself as though you left Egypt. What I wanted to do, and in general, you know, we have a lot of mitzvot at the Seder, a lot of symbols. There's the matzah, the maror, the salt water, the karpas, the arba kosot. We have a lot of different symbols. I wanted us to take a look today together at three of those mitzvot to really try to get a new look at them, a fresh understanding of them, and a theme that I'd like to bring through. So the first one we're going to look at is the mitzvah of maror and charoset. So the maror is a pretty understandable one. It's one that we're very familiar with. The maror tastes bitter. It's supposed to taste bitter, and it's supposed to remind us of the bitterness of the slavery. Okay, vayimaru et chayihem. And in fact, in source 3, the Gemara says that klalo shel davar, in discussing what kind of vegetable qualifies as maror, the Gemara says that klalo shel davar, kol sheyesh bo ta'am maror, anything that tastes bitter, right? Yotzimbo, v'cheisho, ein botan maror, ein yotzimbo. That if something has the taste of bitterness, then we're yotze, and if it doesn't have the taste of bitterness, we're not. Which kind of gets to the question of how romaine lettuce exactly qualifies, okay? But fortunately, that's considered bitter enough for the Gemara. And so for those of us who don't like to really cry the tears with the horseradish, we are yotze with the maror. That is the case in the Gemara. Chasa, the Gemara talks about. And so that is what we do eat for maror. The charoset, though, is a little bit more interesting. And the charoset, you know, I'm not sure if everybody knows that the charoset is actually mentioned in the Mishnah. It's not just, it's a very, very old, very, very old minhag or mitzvah, depending on whom you ask, which Tana you ask. And the mitzvah of having charoset, or the custom to have charoset at the table, is very, very ancient. So let's look at at source 4. At the discussion of the mitzvah of charoset, and see if we can understand a little bit better what the charoset is all about. So, if you look in the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Yudalet Amud Aleph in source 4, it says, "Heviu lefanav mitabel b'chazeret ad shemegi leperperet tapat, heviu lefanav matzah v'chazeret v'charoset ushnei tevshilin, aval pi she'ein charoset mitzvah." So the Mishnah is telling us about the Seder. So you bring, the first thing is called karpas, so you dip the karpas, and then you bring in the matzah, and the maror, and the charoset, and two tevshilin, two cooked things, the zeroa and the egg. Okay, this is talking about the things that are on the Seder plate. And even though you bring in the charoset, even though charoset's not a mitzvah, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, omer mitzvah. Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Tzadok, said that charoset is actually a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to have charoset at the Seder. And then the Mishnah continues, of a mikdash, hayu mevi'im lefanav gufo shel Pesach. And at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, they used to bring the gufo shel Pesach. And it's kind of a very, just take a moment to think about that the Mishnah is sort of reminiscing, you know, there were different, you know, the Mishnah was written over time, and there were Tanaim who lived at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, right, and Tanaim who didn't. And obviously this Mishnah is saying, you know, in the time of the Mikdash, we remember there were Tanaim who saw the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, right? And so they're saying, you know, and at the time of the Mikdash, We used to have the real Pesach, and it's just kind of a moment when you're reading this Mishnah to say, wow, like Pesach would be so different if we had a Beit HaMikdash. Anyway, so the Gemara is analyzing this Mishnah, okay, and it asks, the first thing it asks is, well, if it's not a mitzvah, then why do we have the charoset? Okay? And the answer, according to the Tana Kama, who says that there's no mitzvah for charoset, is just that the charoset is to make the maror not dangerous, okay? Because there was either a kappa bug or a kappa poison that the charoset would neutralize, okay? And so we eat the charoset, we dip the maror in the charoset to get rid of that kappa. There's a machloket what kappa means. It's either a bug or something that was dangerous on the charoset, on the lettuce, on the maror. And so if it's not a mitzvah, it's not anything symbolic at all. It's just a safety feature, okay, that we bring to our table in order to be safe. Okay? Like there are other mitzvot like that, right? Like the Gemara says we shouldn't eat fish and meat together because not because of any kashrus problem, but because it's dangerous, according to the Gemara. So this would be the same thing. However, according to Rabbi Eliezer bar Rabbi Tzadok, that's where it gets interesting. Okay, so the Gemara goes on and says, Rabbi Eliezer bar Rabbi Tzadok, if you look at the second paragraph there in source 4, he says mitzvah. And the Gemara says, my mitzvah. So Rabbi Levi says, zecher letapuach. And Rabbi Yochanan says, zecher letit. So zecher letapuach is in memory of the apple. Okay, that's probably what it means, the apple. And Rabbi Yochanan says it's in memory of the mortar that was used to make the bricks. So Amar Rabbi says, you must make it tart, and you must make it thick. Make it tart in memory of the apple. And you should make it thick because it should remind you of the mortar. Tanya Kavatei de Rabbi Yochanan, we have a Tanaitic source that supports Rabbi Yochanan. Tavlin Zecher Leteven, that we used to put, they used to put spices in to remind us of the straw. Okay? Because spices are like, can be, let's say, like a cinnamon stick or, you know, little flakes of different things could remind you of the shape or texture of straw. And you're supposed to put spices in to remind you of the straw. Charoset zecher letit. And then the mush is zecher, is, you know, in memory of the mortar. Amar Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok said, the grocers in Yerushalayim used to say, come and buy spices for your mitzvah, okay, for the mitzvah of charoset. So what we need to analyze is, what is this dispute between Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Yochanan? What is the charoset in memory of? So Rabbi Yochanan says the charoset is in memory of the mortar. And that's understandable, right? In memory of the mortar, we get that idea. The mortar, it reminds us of slavery, and so it has to be thick and mortar-like, and therefore it's going to remind us of the slavery. But what do you think the straw is trying to teach us? What's the idea behind the straw? Is it just, okay, it's just reminding us of the slavery, or is there more symbolism in the straw? Or in the mortar? Any ideas? What does the straw maybe symbolize? If you think about the story, yes, Erica. Ooh, louder, please. Excellent. Okay. Erica's remembering that the straw is not just stum anything. It reminds us of part of the story of the slavery in Mitzrayim. When we were slaves in Egypt, right, there was a point at which we were not given straw anymore. When Moshe started making trouble, Paro said, you know what? No more straw. So it reminds us of that. Now, what is that? What is the fact that Paro refused to give us straw? What is that? What did that do to us? So it, of course, made our lives more difficult, right? Because Paro said that we had to continue producing the same number of bricks, but now we had to go get the straw, okay? It's like, you know, when there's a budget cut and you have to do the same thing, but with less money, okay? So I don't know how many of you deal with budgets, but if you do, it's very challenging and stressful, right? When you have to do the same thing with less. So this was with their bodies. They had to suffer more. I saw a very nice idea from Rav Eliezer Kvass from Yeshivat Har Etzion. He pointed out that the idea of taking away the straw did more than just make our lives more difficult. He said that what it did was it took away our ability to be good slaves. In other words, whatever you're doing, whether you're a banker or a teacher or a student or a slave, okay, none of those have anything to do with each other, okay? Whatever you are, homemaker or whatever, you want to feel that you could do a good job with whatever you're doing, right? We take pride in whatever it is that we do. So if I'm a student, I want to be a good student. And if I'm a homemaker, I want to be able to be a good homemaker. And if I'm a teacher or a banker or a doctor or whatever, an Indian chief, I want to be whatever it is that I want to be, do a good job. And what Paro did, what Paro did is he said, you can't even be a good slave anymore. You're going to have to get the teven yourself. You're going to have to get the straw. But you're going to have to make the same number of bricks, which is not possible. So you are going to suffer. It's not just suffering physically. There's psychological suffering that takes place when you take away my ability to take pride in what I'm doing. Even if I'm a slave, I want to take pride in what I'm doing. And he gave an example from the Medrash. Medrash tells about in Eicha Rabbah, talks about how Hadrian, the emperor, said to a Jew would pass by and say, a Jew passed by and said hello to Hadrian. And he said, who are you? And he said, a Jew. And he said, do you think a Jew passes by Hadrian and says hello? And he had the Jew beheaded. So there was another Jew who saw that story. So he passed by Hadrian and didn't say hello. And Hadrian said to him, who are you? And he said, a Jew. He said, you think a Jew passes by Hadrian and doesn't say hello? And he had him beheaded. And so what he was doing, now he could have just killed Jews randomly no matter what, right? He didn't have to pretend that there was a reason. But what he was doing was taking away their psychological, he was making them suffer psychologically. They couldn't even figure out what to do. He didn't want to just kill them. He wanted to drive them crazy first. Right? So he beheads one for saying hello, and he beheads the next one for not saying hello, and then the next one doesn't know what to do. Right? Or so it's worse. It's worse than just killing somebody, to first take away their dignity. And that's what Paro was doing, and took away the teven. And so the charoset, when we say zecher latit, it's true, it's in memory of the mortar, right? But it's also in memory, according to the Gemara, of the straw. The spike says, I don't even know what different people put in. I only know what we do, and ours is an Indian, special Indian recipe from my mother. But, there's no straw in it. There are no spices in it. But as different, there are actually lots of different recipes. If you look in the Haggadah Shlema of Rav Kasher, he apparently has a whole list of them. But maybe people put cinnamon in. That would be in, although our cinnamon is ground and not like, maybe you'll buy a cinnamon stick and crack it up a little bit, put it in. Actually, there's a tradition that some people used to actually take a little bit of brick and grind it up and put it in. And there's a whole discussion, there was an Achron who said, that's ridiculous. It's because of a misprint that, they thought it actually said cheres and it really said charoset, or I don't know, I don't remember exactly the details, but there are a lot of different recipes for charoset. But one of them includes something that is straw-like. So that is the teat and the tavlin. But what about this tapuach? What could it mean, zecher l'tapuach? What does a tapuach, what does an apple have to do with the slavery or the geula from Mitzrayim? Does anybody have any ideas? An apple? Yeah. Excellent. Okay. The pasuk from Shir HaShirim, okay, Tachat Tapuach Orarticha, that the Medrash says that when the Jews were slaves in Egypt, right, when we were slaves in Mitzrayim, the men decided that they did not want to be with their wives anymore because they didn't want to bring more children into this terrible world, into this terrible life. And basically, they decided they wanted to just stop the Jewish people, right? I mean, if there are no more children, then there's no future. Because what's the point of bringing children into a future like this? And so they gave up. And the women, and this is actually, right, the Zechel and Nashim Tzidkaniyot, right, La Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyot Nigalu, Mimitzrayim, the Gemara says that it's, the Medrash says it's because of the righteous women we were redeemed from Mitzrayim. It's referring to women, to the women who decided to try to convince their husbands that they shouldn't, that we should not separate in this way, and we should bring children into the world. And so they came to their husbands, and they washed their husbands, fed them, and basically got them comfortable and seduced their husbands, and were with them, and then produced children. And when the children were going to be born, the women were afraid of the Egyptians seeing, so they went out to the fields, and under the apple trees they gave birth. And the Medrash says that Hashem took care of the babies and washed them and took care of them and took care of the mothers. And basically, it was this scene of wonderful caring. The women care for their husbands, and then Hashem cares for the babies. So this is a totally different idea. Rabbi Levi is saying that the charoset is zecher letapuach. Now, what message does that hold? What is the message of charoset? If we say it's zecher letapuach. So it's a totally different message, right, than the mortar. The mortar, the bricks, the straw, that's about the psychological degradation of the Jewish people, right? But if you think of the charoset as zecher letapuach, that's about the psychological victory of the Jewish people. What were the women doing? They were saying to Paro, they were saying to their husbands, don't let Paro win. You're letting Paro win if you give up. If you're saying that there's no point in bringing more children into this world and the Jewish people should just end, right? And we should never fulfill the dream of Pakod Yifkod Elokim Etchem, that Yosef told his brothers, and that was passed on and on and on, right? Don't let Paro win. We are going to continue having children. We will take care of you. And in response, Hashem takes care of us. And so the tapuach is actually a symbol of hope, a symbol of psychological victory, the exact opposite of the symbol of the teven and of the mortar. And so charoset, at the same time, is the mortar and the bricks and the straw and the degradation and the hard labor. But at the same time, it's the hope, it's the caring, it's the, we're not going to let Paro win. And in fact, the charoset in many recipes is very sweet, right? And perhaps it does include apples in many recipes, right? And so perhaps it's trying to be a dual symbol. It's dark, it's mortar-like, it's thick, but it's also sweet and contains apples, sometimes because of this trying to remember both of these ideas. So it turns out that the charoset is a textured symbol, and I guess both literally and figuratively, it has both elements to it. The next symbol I wanted to talk about is the four kosot, the dalet kosot, which is a mitzvah midrabanan, to have four cups of wine at the Seder. And the Gemara explicitly says that women are also obligated in these four cups of wine because of the concept of afhein hayubo tohanes, that women were also involved in the miracle. Two different interpretations in the Rishonim of that. Rashi and the Rashbam say that it's that we were instrumental in the miracle, in that the Nashim Tidkaniyot were the ones who, in their zechut, in our zechut, we were redeemed. And according to Tosfot and others, it's that we were also saved in the miracle. We were also saved. We were also, slaves, and we became free. And therefore, we are also obligated in that mitzvah. So what is the idea behind the four cups? This I think is so interesting, because when you're growing up, you learn one idea about the four cups, right? What is it? Right? Before Lashonot of Geula, right? Votzeti, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vilakachti. But actually the Gemara in the Yerushalmi has four different reasons for why we have the Arba Kosot, which totally open our eyes to different ways of looking at it. So I'm going to share that Yerushalmi with you now. The Yerushalmi begins by saying, Minayin la'arba'a kosot. Where do we get the four cups from? And in fact, the first answer is Rabbi Yochanan b'shem Rabbi Benaya says, Keneged arba'a geulot. It is corresponding to the four lishonot of four expressions of freedom. Lachein amor levnei Yisrael ani Hashem vehotzeiti etchem vechulei vilakachti etchem vehotzeiti vitzalti vegaalti vilakachti. Right, that I will take you out, I will redeem you, I will save you, I will redeem you, I will take you. And so that's the basic idea. Just to give us a little bit of maybe a drop more insight into this idea, if we look at the psukim in source 6, let's just look at these words for just a moment and see if we can understand a little better. What is the difference between hotzeiti, hitzalti, ga'alti, and lakachti? Why have four, right? I mean, you know, Hashem could have just said vehotzeiti or just vehitzalti. Why vehotzeiti, vitzalti, ga'alti, v'lakachti? What's going on in that line of verbs? Any ideas? I'll give you an example. Rabbi Arya Kaplan in the book Jewish Meditation talks about Shmona Esrei. And he talks about the end of the first bracha of Shmona Esrei where we say, Melech Ozer Umoshia Umagen. And he says, what's Melech Ozer Umoshia Umagen? You know, four expressions of our relationship with Hashem. And he says, and this actually I think about when I daven, he says, a Melech is far away from you. Right, a melech is your king. There's a certain distance. There's a certain fear. Right, ozer is someone who helps you. Right, someone a little closer. Someone who helps you might be somebody who sends you money, who I don't know helps you in other ways. You know, helps somebody cross the street. I don't know. And ozer, a moshia is even closer. Someone who saves you. Right, someone who takes you out of a bad situation and saves you. And then a magen is a shield. It's going totally around you. It's the closest. So when we say Melech Ozer Moshiach Magen, Rabbi Kaplan said that what we should be thinking is about the idea that we're coming, or Hashem is, or we are coming closer and closer. Melech Ozer Moshiach Magen. Okay, so if you think about vehotzeiti, vitzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti, you can really see the same kind of progression. Vehotzeiti is I'll take you out. I'll physically take you out of where you are and bring you somewhere else, okay? Vehitzalti is I will save you, okay? It's the same action of taking you out, but it's a different message, a different relationship, it's a different way of looking at it, right? I'm going to save you. Vega'alti is I will redeem you, okay? To save you is one thing. To redeem you is almost has a psychological meaning, right? That I'm not just saving you like I'm saving you from drowning, right? I'm redeeming you from a situation and putting you in a whole new perspective, right? And then v'lakachti is I will take you from my nation. That is the closest. So v'hotzeiti, v'hitzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti is really a progression of Hashem talking about coming closer and closer to us, to the Jewish people. And so when we think about the four kosot being the four lishonot of Geulah, it's not just four lishonot of Geulah stam, it's really four lishonot that are meant to bring us closer and closer. And so as we drink each cup, if we're thinking about this, we can think about the process of coming closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then of course, Veheveti is the last Lashon of Gula, which we don't have a cup for, but Veheveti, and I will bring you to Eretz Yisrael. So we see that going to Eretz Yisrael, Hashem's bringing us to Eretz Yisrael is considered the pinnacle if we take this understanding of it being a progression. Veheveti is obviously the pinnacle, and as someone who just made Aliyah, we feel that we've been Zocha to come, you know, that much closer and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to live in his land, which is the point of Yitziyah Mitzrayim. That's the first idea that the Yerushalmi gives. The second idea is the most surprising in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omer, Amar, Keneged arba kosot shel paro, v'kos paro biyadi, v'eschat otam el kos paro, v'etein et hakos al yad paro, v'natata kos paro biyado. What story is this? Where is this story, the four cups of paro? Sorry? It's with Yosef. Yosef is in jail. And these psukim, these verses, are the dream of the sar hamashkim, of the butler, of paro's butler, This is his dream that he's telling over to Yosef, right? And saying, here's what I did. I had grapes. I saw three vines, right? And I had grapes and I squeezed them into the cup and I brought the cup to Paro and he took it from me and he drank it, right? And so Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is claiming that the four cups of the Seder, the Chazal instituted them to remind us of the four cups of the dream of the Sar HaMashkim that he told to Yosef. Like, what does that have to do with the Seder, right? What does that have to do with Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim? Before I ask you for ideas, I just want to mention to you that if you look in a concordance, you will see that the word kos in all of the five books of the Torah, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, appears meaning kos only these times. Okay, only in this context. There's a fifth one, actually. There's a fifth kos in later in the story, where he actually does bring it in reality. He brings the cup to Paro. But otherwise, the word kos appears one other time, and it's referring to a kind of a bird in kashrus. So obviously, it's not the same word. You know, it's not meaning the same thing. And anytime else that the Torah talks about a cup, it uses the word gavia or some other word. It does not use the word kos. Okay, so kos only appears these times. And it only refers to the cup of Paro, which is just interesting. Any ideas? What does the cup of Paro have to do with Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim? Why would Chazal have instituted, four cups to correspond to these four cups? Yeah. Beginning of the process of... Okay, so it's the beginning of the process of Avdut, right? In other words, it's as a result of these four cups that Yosef interprets the dream, gets to be the second in command to Paro, brings the family down, right? I mean, this is kind of, you know, there are many beginnings, I guess, right? But this could be considered one of the beginnings. If Yosef had stayed in jail forever, right, then we would never have gone down to Mitzrayim because Yaakov and the family would never have found Yosef, right? And, you know, that would be that, okay? So the fact that Yosef got out of jail is the beginning of the process of bringing the Jewish people down to Mitzrayim. Yes. That's an excellent idea. Also, the idea that the story of Yosef is a great example, is a paradigmatic story of Hashgacha, of Hashem's taking care of us, right? That Hashem gave Yosef the power to interpret the dreams, and the Sar HaMashkim happened to have this dream and happened to forget about Yosef, but then remember him, and you know, all of it. It's very much a story of Hashgacha, and Yosef even says that. Yosef says that you know, you thought that what you were doing was bad, but Hashem really thought it was good, and all of that. Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, we know Yosef was forgotten by the Sar HaMashkim, right? And some commentaries explain that why was he forgotten? Because he shouldn't have relied on the Sar HaMashkim to get him out of jail. He should have relied on Hashem. And that the message perhaps of this story is that we should rely on Hashem and not on Paro, which is, you know, also very, very interesting idea. I think also you said that it was not only the process of slavery, but this was part of the geula of Yosef, right? In other words, these four cubs were what got Yosef out of jail. And Yosef's jail was a kind of avdus, right? And he's in the boar, he's in Eved in Egypt, and he comes out and becomes second to the king, right? As a result of the interpretation of these four cups. So in a way, this is a microcosm, right? It's a small story of Geula, which is what we are going to experience as well as part of Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim. Any other ideas people had about how these four cups could be connected to Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim? Yes. It could have been, right, it could have been Shibboleth, but it happened to be cups. In other words, it happened to be that the Sar HaMashkim talked about cups. And so when Chazal were thinking, what could we do to, you know, to sort of think when we, to help enhance the celebration of the Seder as a, you know, as a time of Geula, they looked in the Torah and they said, ah, you know, four cups, there are four, you know, Yosef, there are four cups that the Sar HaMashkim gives to the king, or, you know, in the description of the dream, I mean. And so, you know, that's a great parallel that we can use to remind ourselves of Geula. And, you know, it fits in. Wine is Chirut and all of that. I mean, part of the question is there is a chicken and egg question here, right? In other words, did they come up with the idea of the four cups and then look for symbolism? Or did they have, you know, did they see the symbolism and say, ah, four cups, right? It's not clear. And the fact that we have so many different ideas, makes it, you know, more likely perhaps that they sort of wanted to celebrate with wine in some way and found, you know, why the number four, or maybe, you know, found different ideas behind it, which is okay. You know, Chazal have the right to do that. But I think that these cups really, really do have a lot of symbolism there for the Seder night. One other idea that I had, I just wanted to share with you is that if you think about these four cups, if you look at them, there's also a progression here in the four cups that are described in the dream. If you look at source 7, it's the story of the Sar HaMashkim telling his dream to Yosef. Source 7 at the bottom of the first page and going into the second page. So it says that he, you know, describes the grapes and the bunches of grapes. And in Pasuk Yud Aleph, in verse 11, it says, V'kos paro b'yadi, v'akachat anavim, v'aschatotam al kos paro, v'atenat al kos al kaf paro. And then, bo'od shloshet yamim, you will be saved, v'natata kos paro b'yado. So if you look at it, actually, it is coming closer to paro, right? He has the kos of paro in his hand. Then he squeezes the grapes into the cup. And then he, in a dream, gives it to the cup, and then Yosef predicts that he will give the cup to Paro. So each one is kind of coming closer to the service of Paro. And in a way, in a very, you know, sort of a very loose idea, this is a story about somebody who is getting out of jail in order to serve the king. And so if we think metaphorically about that, that's what we are doing also. When we are redeemed from Egypt, we are able to leave slavery and serve the king of kings, right? And obviously, I'm not trying to say that the Chazal really had in mind that Paro is Hashem, or, you know, that equation is not something that we would probably likely do. But I'm saying if we just sort of take a step back and think very metaphorically about it, there is a service of the king that is a shifa, a desire to leave jail, to leave Avdus, and serve the king. That in when we translate it into our terms, is exactly what we're trying to do on the Seder night, is we're leaving Avdut to go to Chirut. And what is Chirut, right? What is the Chirut that we're leaving? We're going to, from, you know, Ki Libnei Yisrael Avadim Avadayhem, right? That Hashem, we are going from being Ovdei Paro, right, to Ovdei Hashem. And so that's another possible idea behind that can connect the Kosot of Paro to the four cups on the Seder night. So that is the second idea in the Yerushalmi, that it's the first is the four Lashonot of Geula. The second is that there are four cups of Paro. The third, Rabbi Levi says, Keneged Arba Malchiot, that it is corresponding to the four kingdoms. Which four kingdoms? The four galuyot, the four kingdoms that enslaved us, the four kingdoms that exiled us, right? We have Mithraim, Ashur, Bavel, and Edom, the four kingdoms that we were exiled to or exiled by. And that's what the four cups symbolize. What a totally different idea. Instead of four Lashonot of Geula, we have four kingdoms that oppressed us. That's what we're remembering when we drink the four cups. This is Mitzrayim. This is Ashur, right? It's really, it's shocking. What do you think the message is of the four cups symbolizing the four oppressors, the four kingdoms that enslaved us, that exiled us? Yeah. Okay. Right? That we're, you know, that we're still here, right? In other words, there are four galuyot. We were saved from three of them. Okay? So, we're still here. It reminds me of when I was in high school, my family took a trip to Italy. And we went and we saw the Arch of Titus. And the Arch of Titus, if people have seen it or seen a picture of it, right? It's an engraved, you know, carving of the Jews being led into slavery with the menorah on their back. It's a very famous picture. And of course, you know, the Arch of Titus is all that's left of Titus, right? Titus is no longer here. The Roman Empire is no longer here. And here we are. And it was this tremendous celebration to go and see the Arch of Titus. In fact, I'm not in favor of graffiti, but there was a very cool graffiti on the bottom of the arch, not like in the original thing, but in the bottom where they had put concrete to support the thing. Someone had carved in, Am Yisrael chai le'olam ve'ed amin. And, you know, again, one should never deface public property. But it was so cool because there it was saying right out, you know, here, we're still here. Where are you, Titus? Here we are. Hashem has kept us all of these centuries, all of these years alive. And so, in a sense, the drinking to the Arba Galiot is kind of like, here's to you, Mitzrayim, where are you now? You know, where are you, Paro? Here's to you, Bavel. You know, where are you now? You know, and all of that. Of course, the last galus we're still in, right? The galut of Edom, the galut of Romi, we are still in that galut, right? It may not always feel like galut, but we are still in that galut. And so the fourth cup then is a little bit, there's hope in the first three, right? That we were, you know, we were redeemed, but there's sadness in the, you know, in the one that we haven't been redeemed from. Also, Ashur is not so clear we've been redeemed from. Yeah. Very nice. Okay, that there's no fifth galus. We are in the Heveti is we're in Eretz Yisrael, and so after the fourth galut, we hope that that will be the last one, right? We believe that will be the last one, and that therefore we will then be in Eretz Yisrael forever. Any other ideas? Yeah. There's still going to be, right. I think that, you know, we shouldn't shy away from the idea that maybe the four cups really are a sad, really are meant to be, have that sad side to them. Just like the maror is bitter, maybe the four cups are meant to be bitter. Now, the maror is bitter, but we dip it like kings, right? And we dip it in charosa, which is echel tapuach, which is sweet. So the maror has two sides to it. The four cups can have two sides. The four cups, the farbakoso, can be wine, which is chayrut, and we lean, but they can also symbolize sadness, galut, pain, suffering. They're not just all happy. Like, we always learn that they're just happy. But the truth is that most of the symbols of the Seder have two sides to them. And in fact, what we're seeing from the Yerushalmi is that the four kosot also have two sides to them, perhaps, and that this really is about galut. So that's a fascinating, another perspective on the four kosot. And then the last one is V'rabanan Amri, Keneged Arba'a Kosot Shel Puranut, Shekarash Baruch Hu Atid Lashkot Et Umot HaOlam, Kiko Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Elai Kachat Kos Hayayin HaChema, Kos Zahav Bavel Biyad Hashem, Kikos Biyad Hashem, Yimtar Al Rishaim, Pachim Eish V'Gafrit, V'ruach Zalafot Menat Kosam, that the four kosot are connected, the four cups of poison and of anger that Hashem will feed to our enemies, will cause our enemies to drink. Ukenegdan, atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lashkot et Yisrael, arba'a kosot shel nechamot. Hashem menat chalki v'kosi, dishanta b'shem v'rashi kosi revaya, v'hadein kosi shuvel tesa, train tamat. So if you look at sources 8, 9, 10, and 11, you see the a sampling of the Sukkim that the Yerushalmi mentions. And it's very interesting, actually, if you look at the word, I looked in a concordancia at the word kos, you know, so I mentioned to you already that in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, kos is only referring to the kos of Paro. If you look in Nevi'im and Ketuvim, it's very interesting. In Nevi'im, a kos is generally the kosot of anger, the kosot of anger that Hashem is going to give to our enemies. And in Tehillim, and, you know, in Ketuvim, it is generally the kosot of Nechama and of Yeshua that Hashem is going to give to us. So it's just interesting to notice that symbolism of the kos really kind of changes from, you know, from sort of section to section of Tanakh. And so according to this, according to the Rabbanan, the four cups, the Arba Kosot, are arba kosot of anger, of poison, of revenge against their enemies. Shfoch hamatcha al hagoyim, right? And on the other hand, there are also four cups of nechama that Hashem is going to feed us. And so according to the Rabbanan, the arba kosot are really about geula, but not about the geula from Mitzrayim. It's about the ultimate geula, right? Vehoceiti v'tzalti v'galti v'lakachti is about the geula from Mitzrayim. But these cups, according to this interpretation, is saying it's not about the geula from Mitzrayim. It's about the ultimate geula, when our enemies get their just desserts and when we are comforted by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So according to the Yerushalmi, there are really many different ideas in the Arba Kosod. There's pain, there's galus, there's the geula from Mitzrayim, there's Yosef's geula, which has all the symbolism connected to that, and there's the ultimate geula. And so, again, like we saw with the charoset, the Arba Kosot are not a simple, static message. It's textured, it's complex, it has both sides to it. The last symbol of mitzvah that I want to talk about is the matzah. If you think about matzah versus chametz, Rav Yoel ben Nun from Yeshivat Haaretzion points out, this is kind of an obvious point, that chametz is the ultimate goal of wheat, right? This wheat in its most sophisticated and complex form is bread. Wheat was made to be ground into flour, made into bread, rise, and be the staple of eating that it is, okay? Matzah is wheat that hasn't quite made it, right? It's kind of arrested development. It's matzah. It's something that started out that had the potential to be bread, and right, and matzah has to be able to become chametz in order to be kosher matzah, right? It could have become bread, but it stopped. It's simple. It's not the ultimate. It's not where it's supposed to be. And matzah is in fact lechemoni, right? It's something that it's the poor man's bread because it's simple. The poor man doesn't have time to make something fancy. He just has, he has his cracker, he hurries it down, and he rushes off to work. And in fact, right, the Rambam says in Source 12, and, Rabbi Sabalevsky referenced this, that matzah, ashira matzah, the Rambam says matzah that was kneaded with wine or shemen or dvash or chalav, right, wine or oil or honey, that is not kosher matzah because matzah has to be lechem oni. So Rav Yoel ben Nun points out something very interesting. He says, we're recreating the Yitziat Mitzrayim, right, on the Seder night. And so when we get to leave Mitzrayim, you would think that on the Seder night we eat matzah, right? But then we've left Mitzrayim on the Seder night, and then we should be eating chametz the rest of the week, right? As a celebration. I mean, we made it. We ate the lechem oni, but now we're done, and we've gotten to the goal, and we should be eating chametz. Now, this is also kind of very nice wishful thinking, right? I think that Pesach would be perhaps more enjoyable for some of us if we could eat chametz the rest of the time. But he asks an interesting question. Why do we eat matzah the whole week after we left Egypt? We left Mitzrayim on the first night of Pesach, right? And, and then we, so we should be eating chametz. So he says, a very beautiful idea, and with this we'll end. He says that really, and this is also kind of understood once you think of it, the reason we don't eat chametz after we leave Mitzrayim is that we're not finished when we leave Mitzrayim. When we leave Mitzrayim, we haven't gotten to the ultimate goal. We haven't gotten to chametz yet, because we haven't gotten the Torah and we haven't come to Eretz Yisrael yet. When do we bring chametz? When do we bring chametz in the Beit HaMikdash? Shavuos, the Shtei Halechem, right? And what are we celebrating on Shavuos? We're celebrating two things. We're celebrating Matan Torah, because that's the Chag HaKatzir falls out on the same day as Matan Torah, although the Torah never explicitly makes this connection. We know that it was, right? So we're celebrating Matan Torah on Shavuot. And in what context do we bring the Shtei Halechem, though? Along with the Bikurim, right? The Bikurim, which are the first fruits, which are celebrating our entry to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And when you think about it, what do we say when we bring the Bikurim? We say something called Mikra Bikurim. What is Mikra Bikurim? Arami Oved Avi. Right? Vayered Mitzrayma. Vayagar Sham Bimtei Ma'at. Vayhi Sham L'Goy Gadol Atum Vara. Vayareu Otanu HaMitzrim. Vayanunu. Vayitnu Aleinu Avada Kasha. ונצעק אל השם אלוהי אבותינו, וישמע אדוני את קולנו, וירא את עוניינו ואת עמלנו ואת לחצנו, ויוציאנו אדוני ממצרים ביד חזקה ובזרוע נטויה ובמראה גדול ובאותות ובמופתים. Doesn't that sound familiar? That is the text of the Haggadah. The text of the Haggadah is Mikra Bikurim. Because the beginning of Mikra Bikurim is remembering that we left Mitzrayim. But the end of Mikra Bikurim, we leave off. That's not where Mikra Bikurim ends. Mikra Bikurim ends with Vayivienu el hamakom hazeh vayiten lanu et haaretz hazot eretz zavat chalav udvash. Va'ata hineh heveti et reshit pri adamah asher natata li Adonai v'hinachto lifnei Adonai Elohecha v'hishtachavita lifnei Adonai Elohecha v'samachta b'chol hatov asher natan lecha Adonai Elohecha ulevetecha hata v'alevi v'ager asher b'sharecha. What's the end of Mikra Bikurim? That Hashem brought us to the land. That Hashem brought us here and we can be happy with all of the good that Hashem has given us. And so it's beautiful. Why do we not eat chametz on Leil Pesach? Because we haven't finished the Mikra Bikurim. We haven't finished the point of the Geula. We eat matzah even after we've left Egypt. Fortunately, we don't eat it for 49 days. We just eat it for 7, right? Or 8, if you live in Chutz Laaretz. Why do we not eat chametz? Because we haven't made it yet. We haven't gotten the Torah and we haven't come to Eretz Yisrael. When do we eat chametz? When we read the end of Mikra Bikurim. When we read the end of the text of the Haggadah. The part that we left out. The part where it says, Vayivienu Hashem. And that's the ultimate goal of the Geula, of the Chag of Pesach. And that's when we eat the chametz. As someone who recently made Aliyah, I feel that our family has come one step closer to this ultimate goal. Of course, we still haven't had the Geula yet, but this Vayivinu Hashem, the Heveti, we feel we're thankful that we've been zocha to come close to that. And we're building a house now, Bezrat Hashem in Eretz Yisrael. And so when I read this, V'samachta b'chol atov asher natan lecha Hashem lokecha leveitecha, that we should be rejoiced in all of the good that Hashem has given us and to our home and to our family. So speaking personally, I feel that we really come closer to that great gift. I just end with a quick story. Of course, talking about the Mikra Bikurim, makes us think of davening for the Beit HaMikdash, right? That we can really do this in its fullest way. We can bring the Bikurim, we can bring the Chametz on Shavuot. We can really experience the second half of the Seder, really, which is bringing the Bikurim on Shavuot. I was going to end with a tefillah for the Beit HaMikdash, and then I thought of this story. That my son, Avraham, who just turned 7, we made a birthday party for him in school. They have a custom, they have a minhag there that, what do they do with the birthday party? They start off by singing Yom Huledet Sameach. And then the birthday child sits at the front and the mora asks, who would like to give a bracha? Who would like to, give a blessing to the child? And whoever wants to raises their hand and comes up and gives a bracha to the child. So, I was expecting the bracha to be, I wish you a ball, and I wish you a Game Boy, and I wish you, a fire truck, and all the wishes that we used to get, all the wishes that you figure kids are going to get. And the first kid gets up and says, I wish for you, my bracha to you, is that you should see the building of the Beit HaMikdash. And the second kid gets up and says, I wish you to be a Rav Gadol Batorah. And the next kid gets up and says, I wish you to have many children. And the next kid gets up and says, I wish for you to be always happy with what you have. And I'm like, where am I? Is this a first grade classroom? Now, what is going on here? And I mean, the truth is that I said to the teacher after, I said, are the brachos always so religious? And she's like, yeah, like, where are you from? it was very funny. But it was really, I mean, we felt, of course, my conclusion from that was I just felt so wonderful that we've come to a place where the children give brachos of that you should be a Rav Gadol, that you should be a tzaddik, that you should have many children, you should see the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, it was just such a beautiful thing. So my bracha to all of us on our birthdays and always. Now, and as we celebrate the Chag HaGeula, that we remember, that all of our symbols are mixed with sadness and happiness, partially because we haven't quite gotten to where we really need to be. And Bezrat Hashem, one day, soon, we will. Chag Sameach.